If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Remember I was teething, little gums bleeding, cried every evening, it was all about eating. When I became a teen, it was all about beefing, now I'm ready for the world, trying to sink my teeth in.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 42 of Food Psych, the season premiere of our third year. Oh my God. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I have a very exciting guest for you. Linda Bacon, a professor and researcher focusing on weight science and the author of the groundbreaking book, Health at Every Size. This season of the podcast is focusing more on the concept of health at every size, so I'm thrilled to have Linda kick it off as the first guest. She's got a lot of awesome information to share, including some really great personal insights that I hadn't heard her discuss anywhere else before, so we get a little exclusive scoop, and I can't wait for you to hear that in just a moment. But first, I want to point you to a couple of great resources for helping improve your relationship with food. The first is my free quiz to assess your relationship with food and see how healthy it is. I'll send you your results via email, along with more than a dozen personalized, individualized tips to help you make peace with food wherever you might fall on the spectrum right now. Take the quiz and get your results today at ChristyHarrison.com/quiz. That's ChristyHarrison.com/quiz. The second resource I want to share is my Intuitive Eating online course. It's a 13-week program that I created to help you work through all the principles of intuitive eating in depth and really demystify and troubleshoot the common areas where people tend to get stuck. I'll show you how to recognize the diet mentality, even in its subtle forms, and how to start substituting healthy thoughts instead. I'll share my secrets to making food and exercise choices from a place of self-care rather than self-control. And I'll teach you how to navigate emotional eating and how to stop alternating between restricting and overeating, and so much more. Several participants have shared that the course has helped them make peace with their, quote, off-limits foods already. As one participant put it after trying one of their, quote, unquote, bad foods, I felt free, sweet, sweet freedom. Why was I so afraid of this food? I doubt I'll feel the need to buy another package when this one's gone, but just knowing it's off the bad list tastes and feels like a huge epiphany. What a moment of power. Participants are also having major revelations about how the diet mentality is hanging on in hidden ways. As one participant put it, before doing this module, I really thought I had given up the diet mentality. Now I realize that although I consciously reject dieting, I still have plenty of work to do towards accepting myself as I am. It was great. It really helped me identify what I need to work on by bringing it to my full awareness. And yet another participant shared this beautiful revelation she had in the course. My worth is not my weight or my looks, but my heart, mind, and soul. I need to trade in my self-judgment for self-love and compassion. It feels impossible some days, but I'm going to do my best. I deserve it. If you'd like to join others on this intuitive eating journey and have some beautiful revelations of your own, go to ChristyHarrison.com/course to learn more and sign up. That's ChristyHarrison.com/course. And then finally, if you like the podcast and want to help us reach more people who need to hear the body positive message, you can leave us a great review on iTunes. And I really appreciate people who've left reviews so far. Just open up iTunes on your computer, type in Food Psych to the search bar, click the result that comes up under podcasts, and then go to the ratings and reviews tab. There you can leave a rating and review sharing what you love about the podcast. And I'm so grateful for these nice reviews because they help bring us up in the ratings and help more people find these positive messages. And now without further ado, let's talk to Linda Bacon. I spoke with her on the phone from her home in the West Coast, and I started out by asking her to describe her relationship to food in childhood.
Yeah, I think it's important to start from the question of how we get to where we are today, because I know that the journey that I had towards becoming more accepting of my body and enjoying it is a journey that a lot of people are on. And there are definitely some universal themes that many of us feel. So let me take you back to my childhood. I know that when I was a kid, I just felt like I didn't fit in. And there was a sense that the way that I could become more popular and get more approval, not only from peers, but also from my parents, was if somehow I modeled what girls are supposed to look like. You know, there are all those images out there, and slender is certainly a big part of it. And we're told that that's something that we can control. So that started me on this whole journey of trying to control my weight in order to feel like I fit in better.
Yeah.
What's interesting is at the time, I would have been considered slender by social standards. And I certainly had a very strong, healthy body. I was quite an athlete at the time. So it was really, you know, a projection of internalizing all of these social ideas that didn't actually apply to me. But it was just this desperate attempt to just try to figure out how to be like everybody else. Yeah. And of course, we have all those ideas out there of how you're supposed to lose weight. And I tried them all. And I should say that I'm a very, very effective dieter. I've got great willpower. And I tried many diets. And on each one, I could say that I was successful and I would manage to lose weight. But what was interesting was at some point, I would regain the weight. And what I learned over time was that the issue wasn't about me. Because sometimes I regained the weight because I was binging and eating out of control. But other times, I found myself regaining the weight even when I was still maintaining my diet and doing all the things that had initially helped me to lose the weight.
Wow.
And this pain that I was in around all of my weight struggles was really hard for me. And the whole, all of the weight cycling that I was doing, the losing weight and regaining weight, and, you know, the fact that it was a constant focus on my mind made me realize that I needed to get some help around this. And I'm pretty academically oriented. So the way that I thought that I needed to go was to learn as much as I could intellectually and figured that would help me. At the time, my problems were really quite challenging. I was in college and I was studying cultural studies. And one of the major realizations that came out of that for me was that this wasn't just my individual journey, that the majority of women were struggling with their weight and struggling around dieting. That was really helpful to kind of put it into a social political context and to recognize the challenges of what it's like to be a woman in this society. That makes us all struggle so much. But nonetheless, the awareness that I wasn't alone didn't get me out of my personal pain. So when I graduated college, the first thing that I did was I went on to graduate school. And at that point, we were conceptualizing weight problems as psychological problems. You know, the whole idea was that if women felt better about themselves, then they wouldn't be abusing their bodies through food.
Right.
And then they would settle into a weight that's healthy for them. So I got a master's degree in psychology, and I focused in on looking at eating habits and eating disorders. And I learned that in part that was true for me, that food was my best friend. You know, when I got depressed, it soothed me and it made me happier. When I was bored, it was something to do. And it was a way to feel better. Temporarily, of course.
Right.
Getting that psych degree was really helpful to help me to learn the skills to better emotionally regulate, you know, to figure out when I was depressed, better ways to take care of myself than the short-term numbing that food can give it.
Right.
And so it was a really wonderful experience to me and really quite helpful. And I did learn a lot about my relationship with food and develop a better relationship with eating. But it still didn't solve my weight problem. What I realized was there was still a lot I didn't understand about weight, that getting a better relationship with food and, you know, being more emotionally grounded didn't help a lot of people to become thinner. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there were a lot of other issues involved.
Right. So more physiological issues than just psychological.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I decided to learn a little bit more about it. And while I had at that point been convinced from everything I was reading psychologically that diets don't work, there's that other solution that's always presented to us, and that's that exercise is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the next thing I did was I got a master's degree in exercise science, and mm-hmm. I was looking specifically on that whole issue of weight and how it's managed and how best to lose weight. And what I discovered when I was studying exercise science was the same old disconnect I discovered in psychology, mm-hmm. that sure, people can exercise regularly and get a lot healthier in their bodies, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to lose weight or maintain weight loss. Mm-hmm. And we see the exact same information in the exercise literature that we see in the diet literature, that in the beginning, there's usually initial weight loss when people start a program. But over the long run, weight is regained even when exercise habits are maintained.
That's so fascinating.
Right. And I know that that's a hard thing to believe, because we're told so much in our culture that mm-hmm. if only you exercise regularly, you're supposed to lose weight and keep it off. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was really quite surprising me to see the scientific literature and see that there's no basis in fact for that.
Yeah.
So then I started to get fascinated with this whole idea with, well, what's going on behind the scenes? How can we understand all of this stuff physiologically? And I decided that I needed a little bit more education to go further mm-hmm. with it. And so this time I went on for a PhD, and my PhD was in physiology. Mm. And physiology is just a general word for how the body functions.
Right.
So you can learn about all the different body systems and how they integrate. But because it's such a broad field, physiologists also choose an area of specialty during their training mm. so that they can learn about one particular system and how it impacts the whole. Mm-hmm. And I decided to study nutrition and metabolism as my focus. And then I started to learn all of the physiologic reasons for why diets don't work and why exercise don't work in terms of long-term weight management. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting to me was that I wasn't discovering anything new. We've known for decades now that the body has a way of managing its fat stores. Mm-hmm. And we know a lot of the physiologic pathways that are involved in helping us to maintain our weights. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when somebody goes on a diet and they start to lose weight, we can track the hormones that are sending messages to their brain and then changing their appetite, for example, so that they want to eat everything and break their diet. Mm-hmm. And so we can see that there's a physiologic impetus behind the urge to break your diet.
Right.
And
right.
we also
your body
see-
starts to think it's starving, right? Is that sort of the reason that those hormones kick in the first place? The
exactly.
fat stores go down to a certain level and your body thinks, oh my God, this is it. This is starvation.
Right. And so it's just a natural protective mode. So it's mm-hmm. about health then that your body's trying to get you to dump that diet.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting is that we also see what happens to those people that do have incredible willpower. Mm-hmm. Because I know that was true for me at times. There were times that I knew I was starving and that food was just calling out to me mm-hmm. all the time. But yet I was so determined that I was able to just kind of still not eat.
Yeah.
And what happened to me is something that happens to many people at that point. And that's that your body then recognizes that sending out all of these appetite signals isn't being effective. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes energy to make you hungry and to want food and think about food all the time.
Right.
And that's wasted energy if the person doesn't have enough energy on their body. Mm-hmm. And so there's a shutdown mechanism then where your body basically gives up with all the hunger signals. And after a while of being on the diet, some people experience not being hungry and that it becomes easier to diet. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is, because you're not supporting your body and getting the energy it needs, it gets more aggressive in trying to manage your energy stores. Mm-hmm. So it can change things that aren't under conscious control. Mm-hmm. So for example, it can slow down your temperature regulation so that you're just not quite as effective at managing your body heat.
Mm-hmm. Which is why people get cold all the time and anorexia or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it also slows down your urge to move, to try to conserve energy.
Right.
So what we find is that even if you do everything right, your body can just still undermine everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
So that you can continue to gain weight despite dieting.
Right. I love that fact. And I tell that to clients a lot that, you know, whatever they're doing to consciously control their weight, their body has another agenda and it's going to do very subtle things to try to regulate the energy balance, including like making them take fewer steps. Or I saw one study that said people had fewer like nervous tics, even like, you know, tapping your foot or whatever, like those things will start to decline because it takes energy to do that too.
Right. And I'm sure everybody's got that experience of mm-hmm. when you wake up in the morning and some days you just don't have nearly as much get up and go as other days.
Yeah.
And maybe there's nothing going on emotionally for you. It's just that your body's slowing down a little bit because it wants to regulate your energy stores. Mm-hmm. I think that when people first hear all of that, they can get kind of depressed because they feel like you can't win.
Right.
But I think there's another way of framing it, and that's to think about how absolutely amazing it is that our bodies can take care of us. And that if we look at this as a good thing, then we don't have to fight ourselves anymore. We can then marvel in this amazing body and just let it do what it does best and take care of us.
Yeah.
And that's a real relief, I think. Once you give in to the idea of trying to control it and be something different than who you are, and just relax into accepting who you are, you find that your body can do amazing things. It wants you to be healthy. It wants you to be functioning well. Yeah. And it'll take you to that place that's optimal for you and where you're functioning best. So it's actually great news that your body can undermine your efforts.
And I think of it too in terms of like survival of the species even. Like we wouldn't be here at all if our ancestors didn't have that programming probably, right? Like that, you know, if people were able to voluntarily starve themselves or deal with starvation for long periods of time without having these regulatory mechanisms kick in, the species probably would have died out long ago. So it makes complete sense that we all have this built into the system.
Exactly. And, you know, and I think it's just something that we can learn to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really honoring your body that it has these mechanisms to protect you and keep you safe.
Right.
Not fighting it. And then, right. So then there's the other piece though of, you know, so that's maybe something people can get their head around if they're in a healthy enough place emotionally to think, yeah, this is great that my body can take care of me. But I've definitely seen clients with eating disorders or who are just really wedded to the diet mentality and, you know, have some disordered eating because of that, that those people, it's very hard to, you know, to even take in the appreciation for their body. It's like they still want to fight their body. They're mad at their body. Some of my sickest clients have said, you know, that they hate that their body does that and they wish that it would just stop trying to protect them. So like, what would you say to someone who's in that place?
The first thing that I would suggest is to ask them what it is that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people are stuck in this mode, maybe you can just give me an example from a client. Like, what do you think that their ultimate goal is?
I think it's acceptance, love, caring, you know, really kind of basic emotional needs. And
okay.
And they think that somehow being thin and being, you know, really underweight is going to get them that somehow.
Right. And so I think that that's where you have to start is that people get a lot out of dieting because it gives them hope that they can have a better life and the happiness that they're looking for. So if you just tell them diets don't work, then you're taking away their hope.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But if we can help people to identify what it is that they're looking for through thinness, you know, that what they're really looking for in the example you gave is, you know, some sense of acceptance in the world, that yeah. people appreciate them, like them. And if you can help them to identify that that's what they want, then you can help them to find strategies to get there. Mm-hmm. But right now, they're wedded to the idea that the only way to get there is through controlling their eating and their body. Mm-hmm. But what we find is that even when people lose weight, it doesn't get them that long-term feeling of satisfaction and acceptance in the world.
Right.
You know, you only have to look to models to see how unhappy so many of them are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got the thin body, but what they don't feel seen in the world.
No.
You know, they're accepted for their bodies, but not for who they are.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great point. And I think it's so, I mean, as women, but even increasingly now men too, I think are you know, there's, it's such a can't win situation. Like no matter how thin you get or no matter how much you match this cultural ideal, quote unquote, it's not enough. It's never like everybody still feels bad about their body at some level. Even people who supposedly match up perfectly with this cultural ideal, they're being scrutinized and that they're scrutinizing themselves against this ideal and feeling they don't measure up still. So it's like, what are we even doing having these right. unattainable ideals?
I actually had an experience that it was really quite profound for me that helped me to see this in a different way, because I actually met a woman who loved her body, felt like it was perfect. Mm. And let me take you back. It was uh-huh. decades ago when I was in my early 20s and this woman was actually a model and I was dating her and she was gorgeous in a very classic model sense. Right. And every time we'd go out in public, it was just miserable for both of us. Mm. Guys would just walk up to her and hit on her all the time. Like I wasn't really aware of just how much that happens to women that are classically beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they would ignore me, you know. Both of us felt bad in that. Like she could never just relax into a conversation with me because we were constantly being interrupted if we went to a bar. Mm-hmm. She felt bad at the way that I was being ignored and nobody was seeing me and knew that I felt pretty uncomfortable with all of that. And what was interesting was it didn't flatter her. Mm-hmm. Basically, she never felt seen in the world. Like they were just seeing her for her body. Right. Like nobody knew her. And yet they were approaching her all the time. And what I found was that she just had really low self-esteem because of her looks. Mm. It's like nobody really saw beyond that.
Right.
You know, here I had met her because we were both doing some volunteer work. And, you know, I saw the compassionate, caring person that she was. That was not something that ever got seen in the world. Yeah. And what I realized was she was just so profoundly unhappy because she never felt valued for who she was. Mm-hmm. So here she had the body and it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Oh my God, that is so profound.
Ultimately, I couldn't stay in a relationship with her because she felt so bad about herself that it was hard for her to kind of let in any kind of attention.
Yeah.
But sure that what she was attracted to in me was she felt like I saw more of her than anybody else did.
Yeah, right. That's so true. It's like, you know, being objectified or valued in terms of society's ideals for what a body's supposed to look like really puts a person in an objectified place and makes them feel like they can't be seen for all the other aspects of themselves.
So what seems important is that regardless of whether you've got that thin body or not, you've got to feel good about who you are. That's what's key. And so that's, I think, one of the best things that you can be telling the women that are coming to you is that you can let go of the role that weight plays in it and first just work on what you're really looking for. And that's to feel okay with who you are.
Yeah. Oh, that's really powerful. And I think that's so true of anybody who seeks weight loss or even increasingly I'm seeing too people who want to change their diet to just quote unquote be healthier. There's still an element of wanting to like match up to some ideal or be more acceptable in the world, because I feel like now increasingly there's this pressure on everybody to be
healthier, you know, nutritionally. There's, especially in big cities and stuff, it's kind of a trend at this point. So for people to feel good about themselves and acceptable, they feel like they have to be, you know, maybe trying different ways of being healthier in terms of their diet or exercise. But it's still coming from a place of lack sometimes and not from a place of just genuinely wanting to care for their bodies.
Exactly. And honestly, having, you know, and I have a PhD where I focused in on nutrition, mm-hmm. and it's really surprising to me, but the role of food in health is really massively blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. There are a lot more important things that have a role in our health, yeah. and that you don't have to have a totally pristine diet in order to optimize your health.
Yeah, that's such an important message for people to hear. I think that's really not conveyed enough. And the popular media makes it seem so opposite of that.
Right. And it's also fascinating, too, when you start to look at the research literature that shows that if you're not enjoying food, mm-hmm. you don't absorb as many nutrients from it.
Yeah.
So let's say you hate broccoli, but you're eating your broccoli as medicine, then you're not going to be getting all the great stuff from it.
Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating, that research. Like, is there, have they found what causes that to be the case? Are there hormones at play or?
Yeah, they found a lot in terms of gut absorption, mm-hmm. that if your gut is tense, then a lot of the absorptive mechanisms just don't work as well.
Mm. That makes sense.
And I mean, everybody probably has that experience of when you get really anxious, maybe you get diarrhea, mm-hmm. you could feel your gut clenching.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that what that means is it's spasming. It's, you know, food's going to be whipping through it much quicker, and mm-hmm. there's not going to be time for your body to break it down properly and to get all the nutrients out of it.
Right. So trying to eat something that you don't like is just going to stress you in a similar way.
Right. You know, but just more subtly.
Yeah.
So you might not feel it as much.
Right. Exactly.
You know, but there's a very profound message in all of that, that basically is to find foods that satisfy you, that you appreciate, and then they'll be able to have a better impact.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little more about health at every size. Like, you know, that concept is something that I've touched on in the podcast and had a couple of guests who were really into that movement come on and discuss it. And that's become more and more my focus as well. And my work is helping people achieve health at every size and just forgetting the weight component. Let's, you know, talk a little bit about what that means in terms of nutrition and then also just generally, you know, exercise and relationship to your body.
I'm happy to go there. And I know that that's the usual framing for people is to mm-hmm. focus in on things like exercise and activity habits and how those support a healthy body. Mm-hmm. But I should also say that I think that in terms of the big picture, that stuff's not nearly as important. When we're starting to look at most of those diseases that we blame on weight, things like heart disease and diabetes and joint problems, et cetera, or actually more heart disease and diabetes, mm-hmm. what we find is that it's social factors that play a much, much larger role than eating or activity or weight.
Yeah.
And for example, economics plays a huge role, mm-hmm. that people that are wealthier are less likely to get a lot of diseases and are more likely to live longer. Mm-hmm. And when people are kind of looking at what are the major factors that kind of help people around diabetes, a lot of stuff around like how much agency and power you have in your life mm-hmm. plays a role. And that's where things like economics and racism and sexism and things like that come into play.
Yeah.
That the more power people have in their worlds and the ability to make a difference, the less likely they are to get disease. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're at a job where you're totally stressed out, where you can't take bathroom breaks when you need to, you know, and you're feeling really stressed because your job interferes with your ability to parent and, mm-hmm. you know, all this kind of stuff, that makes you much more vulnerable to getting things like diabetes and heart disease.
Yeah.
You know? There's this whole myth out there that it's the CEOs, the people at the top of the ladder, that are more likely to get heart disease and die mm-hmm. of heart attacks. It's not true. It's the janitors that are much more likely.
Yeah.
So figuring out how you can get more of a sense of agency in your world, like more sense of power and control over your life, that seems to be one of the biggest issues in terms of helping people to lead healthier lives. Diet just plays a much, much smaller role compared to that.
That is really a powerful message.
Right.
People think of diet and exercise as the main determinants of all of those chronic diseases, typically.
Right. So I would encourage people to think more about the bigger picture and, you know, number one, to stop blaming themselves for disease, you know, and recognizing the various challenges they have that make it hard for them. And also that those things play a role then in what kinds of lifestyle choices that you could make. You know, if you don't have much money, it's going to be harder to get more nutritious choices or to choose foods that you love because you might not have enough money to buy them.
Absolutely.
So it, you know, it then feeds into your ability to exercise regularly and to eat well. I would suggest starting from the bigger picture and, you know, learning how to develop a little bit more compassion for ourselves and our experience and calling on our friends more, you know, developing social relationships is also really important to help us feel more grounded in the world and to recognize that, you know, there's more than just this individual body, take the focus off of that.
Right.
All that stuff can help us to feel better about ourselves. And when we feel better about ourselves, then we take better care of ourselves. So all of those things will then indirectly feed back on our ability to eat well and exercise regularly and do all the things that we conventionally think of.
Right. So the exercise and diet aren't in and of themselves the determinants of health. They're markers maybe that somebody has the capacity to take care of themselves in all kinds of ways.
Right.
Like having the luxury of eating lots of fruits and vegetables and working out a few times a week or whatever is a luxury that's afforded to people who have more means in the first place.
Right. But that said, you know, if you do have the means, there's a lot of great things that you could do around exercise and activity to improve your health and your sense of agency.
Yeah.
So if we're going to talk about them specifically, I would probably prefer to start with exercise just because that seems to play such a big role in health. And again, so much bigger of a role than eating does.
Right. And it plays such a big role in health independent of weight, right? So it's like people can be fit and fat and still be healthier than someone who was thinner on the BMI scale, but not as fit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
That's such an important point, I think, to make for people. Because like you said, you know, people think of exercise as maybe that's the magic bullet for weight loss. And it's not, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have a ton of other benefits anyway.
And, you know, I'm sure that many people, everybody can list all of the benefits. Probably one of the best I would suggest is just a better sense of well-being in the world and more relaxation. You know, it just helps us to release hormones like serotonin, which give us just this sense of well-being on a day-to-day basis that's really valuable. It's not just what's happening to you while you're exercising, but it's the effect that it has on mood regulation and your metabolism and all kinds of other things in the long run that's really quite valuable.
Absolutely.
And so I would suggest that probably one of the biggest ways of looking at exercise is to change the paradigm, because I think a lot of times, as you've been mentioning, people have always thought of exercise as something you're supposed to do around weight control. Mm-hmm. But if you can instead look at exercise as kind of a gift you give yourself, you know, your reward, something that's fun, that makes you happy, it's your way of playing in the world.
Right.
It just makes you feel better. Then you're more apt to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true.
So I would caution people from thinking about exercise as working out, for example. And instead try to think of it as, you know, what do I do that helps me have fun, you know, moving this body?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's making it more a sense of play. And I use the phrase working out too. And you know, that just slipped in there because I guess I probably still have some of that mindset around it too. You know, learning more about health at every size and going through my own, you know, I had an eating disorder 10 years ago and I had my recovery process definitely involved having to come to a better relationship with exercise and not think of it as, you know, compensation. But, you know, right. that's that sort of joyful movement is such a better way to think of it.
And, you know, some people enjoy going to the gym and that's fine. That's great. You know, but a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. And so we need to come up with new frames of exercise and not always think of exercise as something that we need to do that's apart from our lives. Mm-hmm. But instead, we can think of it as something that's just integrated into who we are.
That's a great way to see it, incorporating more daily movement into your life in a way that fits with your work schedule or something, or hobbies maybe that get you moving.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I remember, to give you an example, my parents were very much schooled in the whole idea of exercise as kind of punishment for weighing too much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's their doctor's prescription and something they were supposed to do. And neither of them enjoyed exercise. And what would usually happen was after they'd been to a doctor's visit and were scared sufficiently, mm-hmm. they would join a gym and, you know, get a trainer and push themselves for a while, and that might last for a few weeks, but then they'd lose interest and, mm-hmm. you know, they wouldn't keep it up. And it was quite a struggle for me to find ways that they could just have fun being in their bodies, because they just had such a sense of, you know, their bodies of having betrayed them, and they needed to force themselves to move in order to get healthier. And so it was really quite challenging with them. I remember, you know, one idea that I came up with for them that was really life-changing for them, mm-hmm. and that was, they had just moved to Florida. Mm-hmm. They had just retired. And one of the things that we used to laugh about when we were driving around in Florida was how everybody had these gardens where they had these, like, tacky pink flamingos in their gardens. You know, those plastic things. Uh-huh. That was something that was so alien to them, you know, growing up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We didn't see any of those pink flamingos. And so they always used to laugh about them. So I set this challenge to my parents that they each had to go for a walk, and they had to find the tackiest garden display that they could that had pink flamingos. Uh-huh. And that there was going to be a contest between the two of them. So my parents would start out walking in opposite directions and get to know a neighborhood, and they'd bring their cell phones along, mm-hmm. and they'd be taking pictures and texting those pictures back and forth to one another. And then,
that's great.
You know, eventually sent me all of the pictures, and I was to vote on who won for finding the tackiest stuff. And it became this, like, fun game mm-hmm. for them. And it wasn't exercise anymore. It was, you know, just about going out and having a good time. And the little competitive angle and sharing it with us was, you know, part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was totally different. It was about being physical and being in their body, but it was just about, it was also about having fun. And it was something they looked forward to.
That's amazing. I love that idea.
Right. And I think that we can all find stuff like that that just works for us. Mm-hmm. I've got a friend that we used to get together and go out for beers all the time. Mm-hmm. And then we decided that we would try to find something that'd be a little bit more physical. Mm-hmm. So instead, lately what we've been doing is we've been meeting at a local playground, and I bring a basketball. And, nice. You know, it's like it's not like we're taking the basketball seriously. We're just bouncing it around, shooting every once in a while, you know, while we're still having our intimate get-together conversation. Mm-hmm. It's still being together and connecting about our lives, but we also have this movement thing that we're sharing that's going on in the background.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun, you know, and I find that because we're being physical, it's like we're a little bit more present and excited, and, you know, it makes our conversations more animated. Mm-hmm. So we're still getting the same social interaction, which is what we were looking for, but we're having a better time, and it feels like it's helping us to be better friends.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. Yeah, rather than just sitting stagnant, drinking somewhere, like getting restless in your seat and maybe being at sort of a lower energy level.
Yeah, so I think we can all get creative about this stuff. You know, another mm-hmm. thing that's helpful for me is, like, I spend a lot of time at my computer, and I work at a school where my office building is pretty tall. Mm-hmm. And what I find is I just get so stuck on the computer, you know, and I can not move for a while. So when I have to go to the bathroom, I make sure to go to the bathroom on a different floor. Mm-hmm. And so I'll walk up a few flights to get there. You know, something about the physical exertion, it kind of clears my mind. And when I get back to the computer, it's like I'm much more focused.
Yeah.
So it's not like it took time away from my work. It's actually making me a lot more productive.
Right.
It's an odd thing to actually look forward to bathroom breaks, but now I do.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know that's a little time to get out of your head and away from the computer. I totally relate to that. Sorry, there's a phone ringing in the background. I'm just going to ignore it. But I work from home a couple days a week. And sometimes on those days, I can get those are my journalism days. I'm writing, I'm researching. It gets very heady and intellectual. And, you know, sometimes I just really need to like step back from that and get into my body. And I can start to feel when I'm losing the connection to my body. So just getting outside and walking around the block is like such a godsend for me. And I love my neighborhood. It's like pretty tree-lined streets. So just getting, you know, up the street and around the block feels like this little breath of fresh air and just kind of rejuvenates everything. Even when I'm on a deadline, I feel like sometimes deadlines make you have to like, you feel like you have to buckle down and not leave your chair, but actually it's probably better for helping the creative juices or the energy flow to get moving and come back to it.
Exactly. And you may be happy to know that this is supported by research, that there's been several research studies that have kind of looked at that whole issue of productivity. And they find that people are more productive when they actually do take physical breaks.
Mm, that's great. How often is that recommended? Like, how often should we be taking physical breaks to help be productive?
Yeah, see, I don't really know the science behind all that, but my hit is that it's probably not magic, you know, that you can probably discover that for yourself.
Yeah, yeah, figure out your own optimal schedule that works for you.
Right.
That makes sense. Those are great tips on exercise for health and health at every size. What about the nutrition component? You know, that's, we discussed before, like it's not a magic bullet. Food has such less bearing on overall health than it really is made out to be. But that said, you know, what are some good tips for generally balanced nutrition that support health at every size and don't have anything to do with dieting or weight loss?
Okay. Here's the best suggestion I can make. And that's that eat food that you love and that helps you to feel good. And let me like give you some more framing to help understand why I think that stuff is so important. Let's say you eat nothing but McDonald's. What you're probably going to find is that you're kind of draggy in your body. You know, like you're probably not going to be getting much fiber in that food, and you'll find that you're constipated. You'll find that you get really tired after the meal, and that a couple hours later, you don't have as much energy. Mm-hmm. So those are all clues that those aren't foods that are helping you to feel optimal. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, if you mix that stuff in with foods that have more fiber in them, you're going to find that you've got a more steady energy flow throughout the day. You don't feel those crashes. You're not constipated anymore. Mm-hmm. And when people start to notice that, it helps them to get drawn more to the foods that have more fiber.
Yeah.
So it's a very different framing. Like you could, like a nutritionist could easily say, eat more fiber, and then it becomes a rule that people have to follow. And it's not something they look forward to. But on the other hand, when people discover for themselves that they feel better from eating certain foods, that's what draws them to that. So people might start to notice that, you know, well, when I eat a diet that's higher in fiber, I feel better. And so then I think another thing to go along with that is then trying to figure out, well, if this is the way I want to eat, how do I find foods that are higher in fiber that taste great and that I really enjoy? And you can do all of that. Tell me one of these foods that you think of is just an indulgence. Maybe it's not the most nutritious food, but it's something that tastes delicious to you that you love.
Chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake. Okay. Well, what I would suggest then is that you take a piece of chocolate cake and take a small piece and just put in your mouth and like notice it coming up against your taste buds, what it tastes like, and as it gets softer in your mouth, and just feel all the sensations as it's in your mouth, and then chew it a little bit, and just be very, very attentive to its flavor. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll notice just how amazing it is, you know, and why you love chocolate cake. And if you wait a minute and then take another bite and do that again, and you wait a minute and you take another bite and you do it again, and you just keep doing that, what you're going to find is that the chocolate cake tastes different over time. That your taste buds are most sensitized in those first few bites. And as you eat more, it will still taste good to you, but it won't taste nearly as good. Like you're desensitized to a little degree after a while. And I think that the more we start to recognize this, we can see that the body's giving us all kinds of information to help us to eat the right amounts so that we can love our chocolate cake and get the calories that we need from it. But after a while, it stops serving us as much and our body kind of tones down response for it.
Right. That's and great.
So the more you become an attentive eater, an attuned eater, you know, just eating foods when it's most enjoyable, the better you're going to support a healthy metabolism. What's interesting is that from a nutritional perspective, you can just, you can look at how that affects you. And you could find that if you have a little bit of sugar, it has all these beneficial effects on your body. But if you have a lot of sugar at once, then it could overwhelm your insulin receptors and it could start to get damaging.
Right.
And so your body is just trying to get you to eat a little bit at a time, to eat more moderately. And then it gets what it wants out of it. And that same sugar isn't damaging.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. So if you're more of an attuned eater, what you're basically doing is just making sure that you eat food that's amazing. And when it stops being as amazing, you can put it aside. And it'll be amazing again. If you give yourself permission to eat what you want, when you want, you know, you can come back to it later. So it's not like you're depriving yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, there's no rules around how much you have to eat or not eat or whatever. It's like just listening to your body and letting that guide you.
Right. You know, and you'll also discover that if all you're eating is chocolate cake, again, you know, you're going to be a little bit uncomfortable in the world.
Right.
Constipation is going to be probably the biggest thing you're going to be dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a message to you. So if you want to feel better in your body, it's paying attention to all of those clues. Your body's trying to get you to eat right so that you feel great.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's such great advice for anyone who's, you know, been on the diet roller coaster and is needing to come off. Clients that I work with, I'm always moving them in that direction towards intuitive and attuned eating. But I think it's such a step-by-step process and sometimes, you know, easier said than done for a lot of people who've been mired in that diet mentality for so long. And then of course, for people who have eating disorders where their body's not even telling them the right amounts to eat because they've gotten really dysregulated, like that's a whole other can of worms and that requires a meal plan usually for a while. But, you know, so for people who are in the place where they're ready maybe to start doing this more attuned and intuitive eating, or maybe from your own experience even, like how were you able to come from the perspective of a yo-yo dieter and a, you know, a perpetual dieter to someone who is more attuned to how food feels in your body? Did you have any like moments that it really was clarified for you?
Sure. I think probably one of the biggest things to recognize is this isn't an all or nothing kind of thing. And every moment is an opportunity for you to practice. The key thing, I think, along this route is the idea of acceptance. So let's say, for example, that you come home from a hard day at work and you're feeling really stressed. And the first thing that you think about is, you know, I just want to eat ice cream and kind of numb out. You might do that sometimes. And let's say you do that. And the usual pattern is then to lay on all of the judgment and think, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I broke my diet and now I'm going to get fat. And, you know, and, you know, the whole kaleidoscope happens where you just feel terrible.
Yeah.
And that's just going to make you want to eat again because you feel so bad. But note that at any point along that cycle, you can stop that roller coaster by just putting in a little bit of acceptance. Mm-hmm. You can say to yourself, wow, you know, I had a hard day at work, and the only way I knew how to manage it in the moment was through food. Can I show myself a little bit of compassion that, you know, that at least I found some way of just kind of managing in the moment? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it doesn't serve my long-term needs, but I got through that.
Yeah.
And you could be kinder to yourself. And then what happens is that stops the roller coaster, because now you're not so angry at yourself. You've shown compassion, acceptance. Mm-hmm. And the next moment, you have an opportunity to do something differently.
Yeah. Oh, that's and wonderful.
The more you keep showing yourself acceptance, the easier it's going to be when you come home from work to recognize, wow, I had a hard day. What can I do to take care of myself? Mm-hmm. And you can find other things other than food that are going to serve your both short-term and long-term needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So acceptance. I think it's acceptance is really important. And then also just recognizing that the drive to eat is a drive to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. right? And that there's a lot of other ways that you can take care of yourself that are going to be more effective at doing that. Mm-hmm. And so we all have to learn how to do that, how to show ourselves some love and be kind to ourselves and to come up with ways other than food. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes food can be the way that we get those needs met, but we need a lot of other tools to be able to manage our emotions and be kind to ourselves.
And sometimes food, planning food ahead of time is one of those ways of taking care of ourselves. I know for me, like, I tend to get hangry. Like when I'm so hungry, I start to become irritable and, like, you know, unable to really give myself the compassion that I need. Maybe if I let myself go past the point of really being hungry. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that's good information for me to have to know, like, okay, if I start to notice I'm getting really irritable or I'm getting hungry and I don't have access to food right away, like, this means take the time to do it and get that need met, because otherwise it's going to be impossible to use those other coping skills later. So that's been a really helpful thing to notice, that, you know, food is part of the self-care process. It's not always the magic bullet. But sometimes it's, you know, what I need to be able to be present in other ways to myself.
Sure.
Yeah. So just, you know, paying attention. I think that the whole overall message there is, like, paying attention to your body and what it needs from food is a way to achieve, you know, health, a healthy relationship to food, and start to feel really good about food. And it doesn't involve any rules or, like, musts or shoulds in the way that so much nutrition advice in this society does. And it's more about just your own attunement and letting your body guide you.
Right.
Well, this has been so helpful. I think we're going to have to wrap up in a minute, but I love all these messages about health at every size. And I wanted to ask if there's anything you want to plug or promote, you know, any of your books that you'd like to mention as resources for people.
Sure. If people are looking for more information on this, I've written two books that I think can be pretty helpful in guiding the journey. Mm-hmm. The first is the book called Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight. And the second book is called Body Respect, What Conventional Health Books Leave Out, Get Wrong, or Just Plain Fail to Understand About Weight. Mm-hmm. And both of these books will help to demystify the connection between weight and health and help to support people in being able to make better choices and feel better about themselves. So people might want to check that out and join the Health at Every Size community. There's a lot of great stuff happening. There are many people that are naming these ideas, and you can hook up with the community by going to the Health at Every Size Community Resources, which is haescommunity.org. Awesome. And you'll find plenty of things there. There's also a professional organization for people who are working with these issues called ASDA, the mm-hmm. Association for Size Diversity and Health. And they have a lot of great information on their website as well. And if you go to my website, which is lindabacon.org, and click on the resources link, you'll find that I have written so much information. You can find my resources well organized by topic or the type of person that's looking for it, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of free resources there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. This was really inspirational, and I hope people will definitely check those things out. So thanks again for being on the podcast.
Sure, Christy. I really appreciate what you're doing, and thanks for having me.
So that's our show. Thanks again so much to our guest for being here and to you guys for listening. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with another brand new episode. So be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Android or whatever your favorite podcast app is if you haven't done so already. Meanwhile, I'd love to stay in touch with you online. The best way is by email. So if you join my email VIP list, you'll get exclusive tips about intuitive eating and body positivity and updates about all my work as well as new episodes of the podcast. So if you go to ChristyHarrison.com/email, you can sign up there. That's ChristyHarrison.com/email. And I would love to have you guys all on my VIP list. And then you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Food Psych on Facebook and Food Psych Pod on Twitter. And then I am also on Instagram, just me this time. I don't have a separate account for the podcast, but I'm on Instagram at Christy Harrison, and the first I is a one. The music you're hearing behind me now is by a band called AWOL, and the track is called Food, used under the Creative Commons license. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched. Stupid or scared, no work in the kitchen now. Who put you there in that perfect position now? Bullies want your food, and you ain't really beat. Have you ever went over to your friend's house?
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.